This week on the Afrobeats podcast.
I'm actively trying to figure out more ways to collaborate with people in the city and show that it's like, we're not that disconnected from this reality. Because I think that that's the big thing for me is healing this disconnect that we have. I think that, you know, yeah, it's like that's who we are. And like the nature, the land, like we're supposed to be all a part of that. Like I'm hearing the birds right now. They're shouting across the way. And it's like, that's not a separate thing outside of my house. That's just a part of the world that I live in.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy Christian back at it again with another episode of the Afrobeats podcast, the podcast where we interview dope guests of the African diaspora and share their perspective on soul and culture through a lens of food and the land. Today's special guest in the building, we have a land steward, community organizer, and educator currently based in Washington, D.C. This is their fifth season distributing and growing fresh foods in the DMV. She started Olalekum Farm, a destination in a community for wellness, wholesome connection, and education in 2022, and loves to grow food with ginger, okra, and hot peppers the most. Their mission is to heal the soil, elevate awareness surrounding food sovereignty, and empower beginner farmers and land stewards. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Tolu Ingu.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy.
Watch this.
You're listening to the Afrobeats podcast, garden and table content inspired by culture and soul.
I got into urban agriculture about 10 years ago. So I was born in Detroit, and there's just like a huge movement of urban ag and returning to the land there. And I was volunteering for a nonprofit while I was in high school, and they did a lot around like beautification in the city, painting murals, urban farming. There was also a lot of youth enrichment. And I ended up just, you know, showing up to that on my first day and randomly got placed in an urban farm. And interestingly enough, it was really because nobody else wanted to go. And somehow I found myself there again and again, and I loved that work and just kept returning to the land every season, whether it was just like one time that I could volunteer or, you know, going to visit some, you know, beautiful botanical garden while I was traveling. Like, I feel like that exposure turned some light on in my head and just had me very curious about like what it feels like to connect to the land. And honestly, I don't think I had this idea of like, oh, I want to be a farmer and I want to, you know, like grow food and start this whole thing. Like, I don't know that that really came until after like I finished college. And I was working at a garden at the time. I was doing like something kind of similar, but it was like youth enrichment with like, we had this program called Amazing Sprouts actually. And it was like, we would go in the garden and like grab some basil and like make pesto together and just like have a cute conversation about that. And I feel like the exposure to just like making food out of the plants that were grown in the ground was like, it was just really exciting to see that. And I kept finding more opportunities for that. And actually when I moved to DC in 2020, that's when like it really clicked. And honestly, it was by force almost, because it was when the pandemic happened. So when I moved to DC, I wasn't working in farm spaces. That wasn't what I moved to the area for, but I, you know, found myself quickly wanting to stay and found a job in a mobile farmer's market. And so again, was like in this space where it was like, oh, we're surrounded by food all the time. I'm, you know, we would go to this charter school and like pack a bright green truck and just like, we would drive through the city, mostly in Ward 7 and 8 in DC, where there's just like a huge experience of food apartheid. There's only 3 grocery stores for like 80,000 residents. And just the options we know are fair and few for fresh food. And we would go and set up in parks and like show up with this food, and people would be really excited and just grateful that it was there. And I remember through that even feeling like, this is really exciting. And I want to do more. And I kept just trying to get deeper. And I ended up doing a beginner farmer training program in 2021 that taught me a lot about just like how to start my own business and how to do this for myself. And so actually now I'm a coordinator of that program, and I teach about 30 beginning farmers and land stewards who are predominantly Black and brown women, just how to farm and how to grow their own food. Yeah, so that's kind of how I got started. And I could talk a little bit more about Olele Khan Farm. Does that feel good to start now?
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I want to get into Olele Khan Farm, and I want to talk about, you know, your origin as far as like maybe some of your family. Like, did you have any agricultural roots going back into your lineage?
Yeah, so I actually, that's another part of this. My my grandfather, he was my closest link to the land. He was an agronomist, and he did a lot with like soil health and water and land stewardship. And he actually passed away like 2 weeks after I moved to DC. And I feel like it was just going outside in nature and connecting to plants that really allowed me to heal and reconnect with him in ways that I couldn't when he was alive. And so actually I named my farm after my maternal grandparents, my grandfather Le Khan and my grandmother Ola Bisi. So my farm, Olele Khan Farm, is a combination of their names to honor the work that they've done and that my grandmother did, as she was a teacher and a principal. She's still an amazing grandmother and steward of community and people. So I think just in honoring their legacy, I wanted to hold space for what I can create knowing them and knowing what they've done.
I love that. Something that speaks out to me in that story is that I actually come from a lineage of people who grow food as well, but they also were like teachers and like educators. And I like how, like, from your story, like, you're still, you know, somewhat new into this space, but you're already teaching and already giving back. How do you like navigate that in your head? How do you walk into a space and feel the confidence to be able to teach others? And like, where does that come from?
Yeah, that's a great question. Cause I feel like that's something that I'm actively working on. And I think that, you know, sometimes people see me in this role and they're like, oh, you're so good at what you do. And you're confident when you're up there. And it's like, I have imposter syndrome too. Like, I'm sometimes freaking out in my head, like, oh my gosh, I have to stand up in front of 30 people and they're all looking to me as far as like, what are the answers in this situation? And, you know, I'm happy to show up and to do that, but it's, you know, it's an active process. Like I'm also very introverted. So like, I'm not the most talkative person. I feel like I can say a lot and I show a lot with what I do, but it's hard to sometimes articulate the language that I have. And I feel like this job has actually taught me how to do that better. And it's made me a better educator and land steward.
Yeah, I love that. I love introverts because when they do talk, they be spitting, you know?
Am I rambling?
No, you're good. So in this space, you know, community is like so important. Why do you see, you know, growing food as more of a community sport? Because I feel like people have this misconception with like being a farmer. It's like you have to do everything. You have to cultivate the land. You have to get the seeds. You have to do. Like, how important is community to you? And how do you use community to reach your goals?
Yeah. I mean, I think really community is like the core of everything that I do. It's the foundation. I think that for me, I'm really trying to create a space that is not just for me to learn and to grow food, but to also hold space for others to do that and to hold space for others to heal on the land. Because I think that's the biggest piece of that is in this moment, I'm blessed to have access to half an acre of land and I can cultivate whatever I want on that, whether that's crops or that's community experiences where people who don't know each other can connect and just like, you know, find deeper community and find deeper opportunities. I think in general, just like the focus of the work is holding space for volunteer days. And in a lot of that, it's like, I'm finding people who found me on Instagram because they just looked up like Black farmers in my area and like people who just really want to connect to, stewards of the land that look like them. Cause I think even for me, like I'm newer in this space and I've worked on smaller farms in Maryland and in the DC area. And I've never had a Black farm, like a Black farm owner manage me. I've, you know, only once had even a Black farm manager be in a role where they could teach me. And I think that it's, yeah, it's been a challenge to find spaces where we can actually truly learn in ways that are deeply connected to our culture, because I think there's a lot of intention around just like growing in indigenous ways, and whatever that looks like for that individual. But I think a lot of these concepts of like regenerative agriculture and like this new wave is like, that's who we always were. And that's who we've always been. And so it's like, really, I just want to return to like who I am and to who our people are, and honor those principles and honor the way that we live. And I think just like every time that I connect to the land and I connect with others on the land, I feel like I'm connecting deeper with like my ancestors and my lineage and what it was like to, you know, grow up in Yoruba land and steward that land in Nigeria where my family's from. I think that's the big part of this.
Yeah, go a little bit more on that. So when you talk about regenerative practices, ancestral practice on the farm, like what does that look like for you? How do you bring your specific culture into your space?
Yeah, absolutely. Even for me, like farming is a very spiritual practice. So I think that in a lot of the ways that I've learned to farm prior, it's very much about like efficiency and fast paced. And of course, that's incredibly important when you're, you know, in a business space and you have a job to get done. But I think there's a way of moving that it's like what, you know, many hands make light work. So instead of me trying to do the same job every day in a given week, just to like get one bed prepped to like plant my kale, it's like, why can't I invite seven people to come do that together in 3 hours? And we can see that transformation in a day because we did that all together. And it's like, I think it's about, yeah, it's about that community effort, because it's like farming is really hard and it shouldn't be about one person or one small group of people trying to do all of the work. I think it's like, this is a community effort. And whether that's you want to be a farmer or you want to show up and support a farmer or, you know, volunteer in some smaller way, I think there are opportunities for all of us to connect to the land and be involved. And I think really, I just want to hold space for people to find whatever avenue works for them.
Got it. So let me go back a little bit to your training days when you were kind of like learning the ropes of what it means to be a farmer. Could you take us through, I guess, what does that process look like from beginning to end? What are some of the key things you learned that someone off the street, say if you just took someone off the street and just threw them onto the farm and was like, all right, start farming. What would they need to know?
Don't step in the beds. That's number one. I think... Yeah, it's really, I think it's just like, don't be afraid. Just like show up and trust yourself and trust that you're capable of doing this work. Cause you know, there's many levels to this. And I think, you know, someone can come in and I can just ask them like, hey, do you want to, you know, fill this wheelbarrow with wood chips and mulch these pathways for me? Or, you know, do you want to like amend these beds and add some compost? And, you know, this is like we're adding nutrients to like feed the soil and like feed the plants. Like I think there's like little ways of providing education even in those like things that seem like simple tasks. It's like, oh, we're not just like filling a wheelbarrow with wood and mulch to like, you know, add to this path. It's like, oh, this is important because this gives us a division between like where we're planting and where we're stepping and like how we're, you know, intentionally thinking about this space. I think that, yeah, everything can be a learning opportunity, and I hope that, you know, that's what people can find from like just showing up.
Yeah. I always tell people, like, if you want to learn how to grow food, just go to your community garden. They need the help and can learn really fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the land you're on, you're in PG County, correct? That's the location. Can you talk a little bit about kind of like how you got there and the complexities of being on that in that space?
Sure. Yeah, so the land that I'm on right now is a 11-acre production space. It's actually an urban farm incubator program. So this program was started in 2022. This is going to be the third official season that any farmers are on the land. But essentially, this program was started by a nonprofit in the area, and it's providing an opportunity for farmers who don't have access to land or to purchase land immediately to start their business and essentially incubate their business without those like upfront starter costs that often put farmers in debt or, you know, find them in this tough situation of like creating a lot to you know, just become a viable farmer. And I think to kind of cut that out in the beginning and just say, here's this land, like, do what you can. I think that that has been like very beautiful, because I see that most of the farmers on this space are Black and brown farmers. And so every day I come and I just see like Black women that are older than me, that inspire me and that motivate me doing this work. And everyone has their own agenda for what they do, but ultimately we're all there because we want to grow food and support our communities and show that it's possible. And so I think through that, there's, you know, opportunities for me to stay there for up to 5 years at this time. This is going to be my second year on that plot of land, and I'm really just starting up and trying to see what's possible. But it's been a really good experience. And I think just seeing that anybody can come into this space. There are certain, you know, restrictions of like what is appropriate to like walk onto someone's farm and whatnot, but it's in Watkins Regional Park in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. So it's already a community space, and there's like a community garden right outside. There's an apiary where bees are. There's like a lot of other community spaces. There's a nature center. So I feel like it's already a place that attracts a lot of people that love nature and just gives them another opportunity to connect with the land.
Got it. So I was looking while I was doing research on you. I saw that you had like a GoFundMe and you're continuing to, you know, raise money for your farm, and you have a bunch of different costs and things that come with that. Can you talk about maybe some, what are the hidden costs of being a farmer, and how much does it really take to make things work? Because I think people have an idea and a picture in their head, but you really don't know until you're like in it. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a fair point. I feel like it's something that I'm still figuring out as I go too, because it's like, I had this dream, I had this vision, I wanted to start a farm, and so I did it. And now I'm on the backside like, oh, like, yeah, there's these financial, you know, expenses that I didn't necessarily consider. And I think there's some things that are essential to the business and some things that are important, but maybe you don't need to start with. And so I've been trying to figure out like, what are those essential pieces of infrastructure, like getting an irrigation system. I started last year with just like 3 hoses and like some connectors and hose heads. And now I have like a full on drip irrigation system where I have like, I'll be able to set up lines and I can like turn on my hose and I can go and do something else for 3 hours and then come back. And it's like, that is a level up in terms of that expense, but it's definitely been worth it. And, you know, I had to buy like silage tarps to put on my farm because we're trying to like, you know, suppress the weeds and manage certain things. And I have like 4 tarps that cover maybe a quarter of my farm. And like, that was like $1,000 right there. And it's like, it's plastic. It's plastic. And it costs a lot. And so it's like, yeah, I feel like there's been a good deal of expenses at the beginning that don't go into like the growing the food part, but are essential to doing that, if that makes sense. Like, it's not like compost or something that is feeding that vegetable and creating this really healthy carrot, but it's like, you need this thing so you don't have to weed for, you know, 6 months during the year or get stressed out in other ways that it's like, yeah, you have to think about time, because I feel like actually in all of this, like time is the, you know, the most important resource that we have. And it's like, it feels like we never have enough of it in farming. So like, finding labor support, finding volunteers, finding ways to like fund that, I think is something important to think about at the beginning. And not just funding labor, but paying yourself. Because I feel like that's actually something that like a lot of farmers don't really talk about as much. Like, oh, I think there's this challenge of like even being able to pay yourself in the beginning. And I think for me, like if I'm building a sustainable venture and I'm trying to be intentional about what this is, then I'm the first piece of infrastructure in this. And I also need to pay myself, but I also need to do that in a way that doesn't, you know, put me in the hole from the start. And so it's like, yeah, those little things like paying yourself and putting food on your plate. Like, I think it's like, those are things that farmers should think about first. And if it's hard to do that, like at what scale or like what adjustments need to be made in order to make that possible and viable.
Yeah, that's super important. I think people need to be more transparent about those things, especially when it comes to making income and making it a viable experience for people and a livelihood. And I was curious, and I know you're, you know, still early in the game and figuring stuff out, but in your opinion, you know, what are the different ways farms do make money, and what are some ways you're exploring and trying out to produce revenue for the space?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think even just before I had land, I started my business as a seedling side hustle. So like, we're actually, I'm sitting in the room where I started my seedlings. I have a sunroom that just has like beautiful sunlight and like a lot of warmth, and just like started planting seeds and saw what was possible. And, you know, I was able to just like show up to events, you know, go to New Brooklyn Farms where we met, and like, and just show people like, hey, here's this plant you can like put in your container garden or like at home, and you can have tomatoes and it's going to be amazing. And I think just like that also, it not only created a product for me that I could go out in the community and sell, but it also gave me an opportunity to like share my brand and share who I am. Because I think there's definitely still been a transition as far as going from Farmer Tolu to Ola Lekan Farm and having this full business and this entity. But ultimately, people already knew that I was a farmer and I was doing this work before I had the land, because I was committed and I was dedicated. And so I think there's like, you know, other opportunities. Like I save okra seeds every year. So, you know, when I save those seeds, it's like, here's a seed pod that I can carry around. And like, it didn't take much for me to have this product, but it's like that exposure. Like when I tell people, it's like, you can have 50 seeds in this one okra pod. Like it looks like a little sound noise shaker. And there's like 50 plus seeds in here. Like, and all of those plants, if they grow, you'll have 5,000 pounds of okra. It's like, just think about like the magic in this like little thing. And I think just like that exposure in early ways, like, I think it really helps me just see like, oh, there's a lot that I can do to like show up in spaces that aren't just like, you know, bringing turnips and carrots and like, and saying that I'm a farmer. Like I'm an educator. So it's like, can I create a program where I can teach you how to grow food, or I can share some ideas with you? Like ginger is like my favorite thing to grow right now. And I'm, you know, creating workshops around that and trying to create guides that I can share with people. And it's like, there's so much knowledge that farmers have that I think it is really important to like diversify outside of like our traditional production scale. And I think just above that, even like events, like if you have land, if you have access to a space, you can activate that. And so, you know, creating space where it's like, we can get together and we can do yoga and meditation and just unwind and heal and relax. Like, I think that, you know, creates other ways for people to just feel connected and not necessarily have to like get really dirty and break their back and break a sweat. Like, yeah, all of that's fun, but like, you know, to each their own.
Yeah. I love that, because the community garden really is a jump off point for like education and just talking about our food system and the things we care about. What are you kind of like playing around with brand wise? Like, what do you see being the message of your overall brand when people, you know, come to your farm, when they talk to you, what does that look like?
Yeah. So I think just recently I've started branding myself as more than just a production and an education space. So for me, Ola Lekan Farm is a destination in the community, and that's for wellness, for wholesome connection, and for education. And so I think I'm also trying to like flip this script and this understanding of like what it looks like to be a farmer or how you can be a farmer. Cause I think also in that there's so much space to show that, yeah, there's more than one way to do this work. And I think for me, I'm focused on healing. I studied psychology in school, and I'm just learned a lot more about just like our holistic wellness, like not just the physical and the mental, but also the spiritual, the emotional, the communal health. And I think for me, I would love to live in a world where, you know, we're all healthy and we're all healed. And I think holding space for that, that's what I want to do. And growing food and sharing that in community and providing for people, that's incredibly important too. But that's a bonus to this foundation of true healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that community space. I think there's just something about just touching the land and just feeling the, you know, soil between your fingers that just like brings you down to earth, you know?
Yeah, just really, absolutely. Like, connects you.
All right, so you're also doing some work on like the advocacy side of things as well, right? Can you talk about some of the things that are going on with maybe the Farm Bill and the different organizations that you work with, and what type of work are you doing on that side? What are the issues that you care about the most, and what are you advocating for?
Yeah, so right now I'm a part of a 2-year fellowship with the National Young Farmers Coalition. So originally, when I applied for this fellowship, we were working towards creating a marker bill for the 2023 Farm Bill. At the time of this, it's now April 2024, and we are still patiently waiting for that Farm Bill to be passed. But that legislation isn't in writing right now. So there was a marker bill created. It's called the Lasso Bill, the Land Access and Land Access Securities and Opportunity. And with this, we are, you know, advocating for young farmers to be able to access these resources that often are a challenge because of the situation of starting in farm work. It's just hard to like make a living and sustain yourself in this. And often the people that have the technical skills and the experience to do that don't have the capital and the access to the land. So a lot of what we're doing now that the average age of a farmer is, I think now, 67 or so, a lot of those farmers are retiring and either passing on that land to their family, or, you know, if they don't have family to pass that land on to, there's a question of what that land will become. And, you know, if we're in a space where a lot of that land could potentially be developed or turned into non-agricultural land, it's just, I think there's an urgency, especially in this moment, for young farmers in particular and farmers of color to have access to land and the resources to fund that and to sustain it.
I agree. Yeah. Things are getting, you know, treacherous out there. And, you know, that's the thing I keep hearing the most of is like, the two things you talked about, the lack of land access and then the lack of capital. For those who don't know, what are some of the systematic issues that are causing those obstacles to be a thing in the first place? I know that's a loaded question.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big question. I'll try to answer what I can. Just acknowledging that in the United States of America, like agriculture, the system started in slavery and in a time where, you know, the people who did this work weren't paid for their time, for their energy, for their knowledge. Like, we were brought here from West Africa because of how much knowledge we had and how capable we were of stewarding agrarian societies. And so I'm proud of where I come from because I know that it's like, it's not a disservice that we, in this country, as Black Americans, were slaves when this started, but it's like, it's a disservice that we weren't valued for the work that we did, that we were treated in the ways that we were. And because that was the foundation of agriculture and farm workers and laborers, even as over time, these systems have changed and, you know, we've shifted into new ways of you know, sharecropping and then tenant farming. And these, you know, it was like, we have more opportunities. We have, you know, maybe 40 acres in a meal, or we have, you know, we have this access. But then we got to like the early 1900s and there were about 14% of farmers that, you know, were Black that owned land. And now in 2024, it's like maybe 1-2%. And I think it's important to look at that number and see that it's like, how in 100 years did like that many Black farmers lose their land? And I think even like using the word lose, I feel like that removes the responsibility from how that happened, because it's not like this was unintentional, you know, like Black farmers were offered, you know, cash for their land, or their land was burned, or, you know, they were forcibly removed. And, you know, there's a lot of different levels to this. And I can't speak to this personally because my family lineage is not based and rooted in the United States of America until more recently. But even in what I've heard from people who've, you know, had, you know, there were questions about who owns this property, or it wasn't properly recorded, or, you know, somehow the government was able to negotiate that this no longer belonged to these Black people. I think that there has been a lot of land loss over time through through policies, through decisions, whatever it may be, that has led us to this situation. And so I think in that, addressing those two different levels of like, we were never valued for the work that we do. So even in today's time, we have some value assigned to that, but it is still not much. And when we think about, you know, the essential jobs in 2020, there were only so many jobs that were essential that you had to leave your house to go and do this work. And working at that mobile farmers market was one of those jobs. And so it's like, okay, if we need food, we need healthcare, we need childcare, we need all of these things, why are they like the least valued in the society? I think that's like the question we need to start asking, because when we start asking those questions, hopefully we can flip this narrative and we can find ways to value farmers and to show that it is important that farmers receive what they need to succeed.
Absolutely. I hear you talking a little bit about how you have a little bit of a difference in experience based off of like your Nigerian heritage and, you know, you being you're a child of Nigerian immigrants. Can you speak a little bit to that? And I guess I'm just curious about your perspective of the land with that background. Like, yeah, how is that maybe different from like a more traditional or like a Black American experience versus like being the child of Nigerian immigrants? Like, do you often connect to the continent and like get practices from there? Like, how do you? Yeah, I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think that's something that I've also been trying to like figure out personally, and just in terms of like, how can I connect to this land? Because I was born in the United States. So I'm technically first generation removed culturally from Nigeria. Like my parents, my grandparents, they all were raised in Nigeria or have ties to that country. And for me, I know it as a place where I visited, you know, over Christmas break and New Year's, and, you know, it was a fun time and I really enjoyed it, but I never really got that time to just like exist and connect with the land. And I think there was like a few opportunities I remember where, you know, we were like in my grandparents' yard and I had like a cassava yam, like the size of my body. And I remember like that always stuck with me. And then I remember like people talking about yams in the United States and they're talking about sweet potatoes. And I'm like, what is that? Like, that's not a yam. That's really small. But it's like, I think even just those, like those little experiences I had a huge impact on how I perceived food and like how I was able to reconnect with the land when those opportunities came. And so I think for me, this challenge of like, of coming from like my immigrant story, I think that is where I acknowledge now that I don't have any like familial ties to land in this country. Like I don't have access to land that I can steward that is in my family name. And so for me, I'm actively thinking about and trying to understand like what it means to own land in the United States. Like if I were to do that, I don't know if that is my place or if that is even possible. But I think for me, like I'm becoming a lot more comfortable with this idea of being a land steward and tending to the land and caring for the land where I can and as I can. But not necessarily being tied to a specific physical space. Because I think I do also want to be able to connect to the land in Nigeria. I would love to go back and connect with farmers and understand that culture and really what it is today and what that looks like. So hopefully one day I'll get there. That's the goal.
Yeah, for sure. I know you will. Yeah, it's a hard work to just reconnect. You know, I've been doing some of that work too, and just trying to weave things together. It's a very different experience, you know. But yeah, I love that. So I appreciate you taking the time, because I know this is like getting the busy season, right? Like stuff is about to get popping off right now.
Oh yeah, it's busy. It's busy.
What do you have to do to prepare for the new season? Like, what are you doing like right now? What's on your mind? What are all the things you have to do to get ready for the season?
Sure. I mean, so right now I think just in the fields, a lot of bed prep. Today we were doing like a lot of just measuring beds, broad forking, aerating the soil, amending, adding compost and other nutrients. I think that's just going to be like the thing we're doing for the next several weeks. And honestly, the broad fork is like my favorite tool. It's just like a larger fork that you could use like a spading fork, but you can put your whole body on it. And I love that because it's, you're trying to get it as deep into the soil as possible so you can aerate that top layer. And so I feel like there's actually this like really therapeutic process of just like stepping on the broad fork and moving it back and forth. And it's like, this is my favorite thing to do. I could do this for hours. But I think there really is a lot of physical labor that's happening right now. And it feels like the spring, or like this pre-spring moment where we're prepping, is actually sometimes busier than like once the plants are mature and they're growing. Cause at that point it's like, they did the thing. Like, yes, you need to watch out for, you know, disease and pests and take care of them and water them. But ultimately, like at that point, like I feel like I'm just aiding those plants and just letting them do what they need to do. But there's a lot of like organization and like setting up that space so that they can have that best environment. And a lot of that's happening now. And I think just on top of that, like all of the people planning and the work that is being done to like organize for labor and like, you know, hire part-time farm workers and just like create other opportunities for like more people to come into this and to learn from this. I feel like it's like a mutually beneficial situation where we want as many people that are able to show up, and also to have, you know, many hands make light work. We want to get this job done. And I think that's just something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about, because I think for me, it's not really just about growing the food. It's about like growing these people that grow the food and holding space for those people to be the best versions of themselves. So yeah, I think just creating a lot of like, I'm thinking about, I have a class tomorrow and, you know, we're, this is like the beginning of our second quarter, and we're going to be turning over one of the high tunnels so that everybody can grow in there and can have that space to like practice and work with a small group for the rest of the season. And so I think it just feels like there's a lot of like out with the old and in with the new. And it feels like there's a lot of reflection that's coming with that, of just like, when you see something physically, like we're measuring the beds today and looking at them like, yeah, we measured it. And, you know, the string is out there, and it's like, like, does this look right? Like, this looks way off. And it's like, oh, actually, that's because like, I didn't measure any of the beds last year. And I knew that was a mistake. But like, I didn't really have time to think about it. And now in this hindsight moment where I'm like, oh, wow, this bed is like, yeah, you're trying again. So it's like, yeah, just grateful that every season is an opportunity to try again and be better. Because I feel like this is that moment where we're learning from the mistakes of last season and trying to course correct.
Got it. Yeah. All right, the land will humble you. That is for sure. But yeah, I'm glad you guys are getting a good, I can't wait to, I'll have to come out myself and help out sometime. I can't wait.
Yes, please. That'd be great.
Absolutely. So what do you got down the pipeline? You know, where are you seeing yourself in like the next 5 years or so? What's going to be new?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm excited to find out what that looks like too. I feel like right now in this moment, I'm very present with how I'm moving and just very grateful to have access to this land and be able to do the work that I'm doing. You know, I want to continue to create more, you know, events and more opportunities where people can connect to the land. And I think I'm thinking also about ways to actively not just like bring people out to the farm, but bring the farm to the people. Cause I'm still living in DC. Like I drive out to my farm in PG County every day. And I offer, you know, carpool and other ways for people to get there. But I think that there's also this opportunity to bring that to the people. Like, I know you do a lot with container gardening and this small scale gardening. It's like, you can do a lot with a little bit. And so just like, you know, bringing the seeds to the people, bringing the plants, I feel like I'm actively trying to figure out more ways to collaborate with people in the city. And show that it's like, we're not that disconnected from this reality. Cause I think that's the big thing for me is healing this disconnect that we have. I think that, you know, yeah, it's like that's who we are. And like the nature, the land, like we're supposed to be all a part of that. Like I'm hearing the birds right now and they're shouting across the way. And it's like, that's not a separate thing outside of my house. That's just a part of the world that I live in. And so I think for me, this is like holding space for people to shift their mindset and to feel connected and to feel healed by the land in whatever way that looks like. And if that means, you know, I can have a larger space and I can scale up with this farm and do more, then that would be beautiful. But I think really just being present and seeing what is possible now and seeing how people will move, I think that, you know, just from every year to the next, like, we're just going to keep growing and getting better. And it's just a matter of seeing how far we can go.
Hopefully, definitely. Okay, okay. Well, how can people support you? Where, what do you have going on? Where can people find you?
Yeah. So first, I'm on Instagram at Olalekan Farm. That is Olalekaan Farm. You can also email me at farmertolu@gmail.com. I send out monthly newsletters, so that's where I send out most of the information about events that I'm doing, ways to connect, other ways to come out and buy food when that's available. Those are like my main two outlets. And then I actually just started a YouTube channel. So I'm on YouTube also under Olalekan Farm. I'm really trying to get into just more storytelling and yeah, just holding space for people to connect, whether they're in person or, you know, hearing this or receiving it through a digital space. I think I just want to like create videos where I can, you know, harvest my chard and then I'm in the kitchen and we're cooking this beautiful meal and then we're sitting at the table and having a conversation about it. Like, I just want to create more farm to table experiences. And yeah, those are some of the ways to find me. So you can find me on Instagram, email me, or find me on YouTube for now, or come and find me on the land.
I love that. Yeah, we're going to definitely be collaborating again because I want to do the same thing. I love those farm to table experiences. So we'll talk after this. We'll talk.
Yes.
But okay, yeah. All right. So I want to end this conversation with a question I ask all of my guests, and that is, what does it mean for you to be a part of the African diaspora?
Wow. That's a beautiful question. I think I've been reflecting on this a lot lately too, because there's so much duality to my experience with, like, you know, I grew up as a Black American, but I also grew up as a Nigerian American. And I think that perspective of living in Nigeria and also growing up here, I don't know, I think that just, I feel incredibly included and connected in this space. And I love to learn from other people's cultures and experiences. And I think actually, like, moving to DC, that is like one of the things that attracted me here the most, is like, this is Chocolate City. There's a vibrant community of immigrants from everywhere in Africa. And I think just like the food and the music and the culture, like, it's one thing to learn about my experience and my family, but then to just like show up in a space where it's like everyone is here. It's just like, yeah, I love that because I feel like I'm learning more about myself and I'm diving deeper into my own culture and trying to understand my language. And I think for me, this is really about returning, because I think I've lost a lot of that from being in America. I've lost an understanding of who I am. And I grew up in a, you know, a very predominantly white space. And so I didn't really have a lot of people that looked like me around me. And so all I want to do is create spaces where it's, you know, Black and brown people thriving on the land and truly living their lives. And that's, I don't know, that's just where I want to be.
Yeah. Well, that's it for today, y'all. That's it. That's a wrap. So go ahead and go to iTunes, you know, give your boy 5 stars, throw a little comment in there. We're trying to get better each and every week. So if you're feeling your boy, go ahead and take care of that. Share this podcast with your fellow foodies and gardeners, and I'll talk to y'all next week. I love y'all. I appreciate y'all. And remember, keep moving to the beat of your own drum. Talk to you later, fam. Peace.